Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening, and thank you, Douglas, and welcome to a live edition, straight live from Houston, Texas, Breaking the Silence. So just welcome to the program. We're just so excited. Every time I hear the theme music to this program, I just get all ramped up and just raring to go. And just appreciate you being here tonight. This is going to be another awesome hour, and we want you to just sit back and grab you a Twinkie or a Hostess Ding Dong or a Pop-Tart or something, some of that good nutritious food, and just join in with us this evening. We would love to have you to be able to call tonight. Peter Maldonado is going to be with us for really part two of his story, and we're going to talk to him here just shortly from California. But we want you to join in tonight, 888-627-6008. And welcome to the program. And just very soon, not too many weeks or months away, we'll be able to say that not only do we have a book called Shattered by the Darkness, but we have a book called Overcoming the Darkness and the Roadmap to Hope. And that's going to be coming out real soon. So can't wait to be able to offer that to you. And actually, we are working on an actual roadmap that you can open up, like a real roadmap that's going to show you all these different ways to be able to gain your destination, to reach hope in your life. And I'm just pumped up about that. Next week, we're going to have on the program awesome author, Donna Jackson Nakazawa. And then the following week after that, we'll have Dr. David Paradin. And then after that, we're going to have Brian Dempsey the first weekend in March to kind of part two to his story. So we have some great guests coming up. I personally think probably some of the best guests in the nation. So really, really excited. I'm glad you're here with us tonight. This week, I'll be traveling to Atlanta, Georgia. Just listen to the places that I'll be going in the next few weeks. Atlanta, Chicago, Wisconsin Dells, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Anaheim, California. That's just a few of the places that we'll be going to and sharing the hope, sharing the story of how to be able to overcome trauma, how to be able to learn about adverse childhood experiences and apply them to your life, how to be able to get down on the level, eyeball to eyeball with the child, to be able to say, are you okay? How's everything going with you? What can we do to help you? And to be able to help children out. So I'm glad you're with us tonight. You may want to get a notepad. I always like to start off with something that you can kind of take with you, apply to your life. And here's just a few things I'd like for you to jot down. Truths that can make you stronger. Just facts that put a little muscle on your bone in your life. And the first thing I want to let you know about tonight is life. It's a hard fact, but life isn't easy. Life is hard. Hard work makes people lucky. It's the stuff that brings dreams to reality. And life sometimes just deals us a deck of cards, a hand of cards that we're just not looking forward to, we didn't expect. So start every morning ready to run a little farther than what you did the day before and fight just a little bit harder for life, for those important things in life like you never have before. Second truth that maybe not so easy to deal with, you're going to fail. Every now and then, you're going to fail. And the faster that you accept this, the faster that you get on with moving forward in your life, the better off your life's going to be. So don't let failure get to your heart or success to get to your head. Okay, let me repeat that. Don't let failure to get to your heart and keep you down and depressed, but don't let success get to your head so fast that you start floating around the room and you can't get inside the door anymore because it's too big. Do your best and let your consistent daily actions speak for themselves over the long term. Right now, there's a lot that we don't know, that you don't know in your own life. The day that you stop learning is the day that you stop living. Embrace new information, think about it, and use it to advance yourself. A couple more. This is a harsh reality, a hard truth. There may not be a tomorrow. Not for everyone. It's sad, but it's true. So spend your time wisely today and take time enough to pause long enough to appreciate the day that you're in right now. Don't wish your life away. Another truth, there's a lot that you can't control in your life. You don't have to be able to control everything in your life to find peace and happiness. I've learned this the hard way. It lives with you always and deep within. See what happens when you loosen your grip, throw your hands into the air, and allow life to just happen and flow. A couple more. You can't be successful without providing value. Invest your time, energy, effort into other people. Never climb the ladder to success on your own. Always reach back and grab a hold of somebody's hand and help them up the ladder along with you. Provide value in their life. John Maxwell, a wonderful writer, a wonderful motivational speaker, always talks about putting investments and value into other people, and you'll always come out ahead when you can bring people along with you. One more. You just can't change the past. Sometimes I wish I could. Sometimes I wish I could go with some kind of a miracle whiteout and white out some of the stuff in my past, some of the stuff that I just messed up, just got completely wrong, made crazy mistakes and judgments, made crazy decisions on what I was going to do with my life, made crazy decisions of what I was going to say or not say, what I was going to keep to myself when I should have been more open and honest with people. But, you know, here I am, 2020, middle of February. I can't change one thing that happened. But I can change how I react to my past and how I look forward to my future and how I will always try to make tomorrow a better day than today. Just a few little truths that I want to throw out at you as we start the program this evening. And I hope you get a little bit of encouragement out of that. Never give up. Never give up. Hang in there. Peter Maldonado is going to be our guest this evening. And Peter is from Newman, California. He is a counselor employed by Golden Valley Health Centers in Modesto, California, as a recovery service specialist, and he helps counsel and guide patients who struggle with probably one of the most devastating addictions epidemics that we have in our country right now, those people that struggle with opioid disorder, and he works with them. And as a substance abuse counselor, he's going to talk to you tonight about how his life got changed one day and how he decided to turn his life around and change the rest of it to the positive. So, Peter, welcome to the program tonight for part two of Your Life Story. Welcome, Peter. How are you doing tonight?
Well, thank you very much. I'm doing really well, Dr. Williams. I appreciate you having me on again.
Well, no problem. We had so much response from your first program, and this is something I really want to throw out at you, Peter, that the people that I had the response from, which was a lot of people, a lot of emails, a lot of texts, immediately following the program, just as soon as we sign off, everything just goes crazy for a while, and I love getting those texts and emails. 9 out of 10 of those that I got, over and over and over and over again, I got dozens. They loved your talk. They loved your life. But what they all said was they loved how real and authentic you were, how honest you were. And I just applaud you in that. And may you continue that on. I just want to kind of encourage you before we get started to just keep that being real, because people are gravitate towards that. So thank you for being authentic, being real. So I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Peter. Now, as we only talked about 1.5 minutes before we came on air tonight, but I just kind of said, hey, we're just going to sit back and have a cup of coffee and have a soda and just talk. And I want you to kind of tell us what you're doing right now, and then real quickly, as fast as we can, because we don't want it to take up the meat of what we did last time. I encourage everybody to get on the archives tonight if you want to and listen to part one. And Peter, that was what, several weeks ago you were on? Maybe three or four weeks ago. And listen to that story. But if you could, just kind of get us up to date with what you're doing right now, and then recap real briefly how you got to be where you are right now. Go for it, Peter.
Yes, for sure. Well, first of all, I just want to praise God, you know, and just give him all the glory for allowing me this opportunity to share with you guys again. And I guess I want to apologize, too, because I listened to the broadcast that you had me on January 13th, and I felt like I was in a hurry, in a rush. I guess I wanted to sound perfect and, you know, and make it a good show. And, you know, that's pretty much the story of my life, one of my character defects, if you will, you know, trying to be perfect, which definitely will never happen. But, you know, just thank you again. You know, thank God for giving me this opportunity once again. And before I start, I do have to say, I was listening to your last week's show, to Dr. Tyon Dayton.
Yes.
I mean, what a segue into my show, because I grew up with alcoholism and, you know, ACOA. I'll share a little bit about that, what I did in prison, bringing that group into the men. And wow, amazing book that I'm going to buy as well. But yeah, with that, what I'm doing right now is I'm a recovery service specialist, as you mentioned earlier. And basically, I'm certified as a KDAC 2. As a substance abuse counselor, and what I do is I work with ladies and gentlemen who are struggling with opioid use disorder, and that could range from heroin use, it can range from all the pain medication prescriptions, the Norcos, the Vicodins, the Oxycontins, and whatnot. And right now, the agency I work for is amazing. Our doors are open to anybody, gender don't matter, socioeconomic background, race, it doesn't matter, and you know, there's a lot of people, as you mentioned, they're struggling with it right now. And what I bring to the table there, not only is my experience as a counselor, my training, but also the personal experience as well, because I also battled with my own addiction for 25 years.
Yeah. Okay. So Peter, when you, I think the thing that makes your story so amazing is that you just didn't by chance stumble into this career. Nothing's by chance. But
no.
I think when I was even telling some people this morning at church that, you know, hey, make sure you listen tonight because we're going to have Peter back on, and was telling them all about it. And that the story is so phenomenal that apparently you were driving intoxicated or under the influence, and somehow, as I guess you don't remember, you ran over somebody, hit somebody, and killed them.
Yeah.
And in California, they've sentenced you to, what, 15 years to life?
18 years to life.
18 years to life. Now tell me, because we really didn't talk much about that.
No.
How did you endure a couple of things? First of all, being in prison, because you apparently had a pretty good life going for you. You were talking about going golfing and you live in beautiful California and all this stuff. How did you endure prison? And then when you get to, while you're in prison, how do you endure the pain that by your actions you actually were involved in an act that took somebody else's life? Put me inside your head a little bit with how you dealt with that.
Wow, you know, and I have to really comment on the very last truth that you shared prior to the show beginning about, you know, our past, you know.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I've been able to set aside, if you will, because without Christ and God's forgiveness, there's no way I would ever had been able to endure this journey that I'm still on, if you will. So as you mentioned, you know, grew up in a small town, grew up in a dysfunctional alcoholic home, vowed never to be like my dad, ended up going to the same substance that destroyed our family, which in turn ended up destroying my own family. At the time, I was in Palm Springs, as you mentioned, there at a timeshare with my then wife and two little girls. They were at the timeshare. I had a tea time November 7th, 2002, on Thursday morning. And the last thing I remember vaguely, if you will, is ordering a drink at the clubhouse and then being handcuffed by a CHP officer telling me that I just got through running over a gentleman on a bike, pushing his bike on the soft shoulder, Interstate 10, and dragging him over 200 feet and killing him. And, you know, to me, to be able to process that coming, like I said, from a little town of Newman, California, wanting to be a professional baseball player all my years, you know, had that dream fulfilled to a certain degree, and then all of a sudden, here I am. I find myself coming out of a complete alcoholic and drug blackout, wondering what had just happened, what had just transpired, and all the voices in my head going, you know, from my mom saying, "Son, please, you know, look what it did to your dad." Wife saying, "Please stop." Friends who really cared for me say, you know, you need to slow down. Coaches telling me the same thing. All those voices were just going through my head as I was coming to out of a blackout into Indio County Jail. And that's when the journey began. That's when I finally committed my life to the Lord. And I said, I can't do this. Whatever's going to happen from here on out, I commit my life to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And from there on, that's where the journey started, as I mentioned. Imagine this, having to turn in our vehicle that we drove into the authorities for forensics, having to rent a car, bring all our stuff that we had on the vacation, and drive a 6.5-hour straight shot back from Palm Springs to Modesto, California. My two daughters, 5 and 3 at the time, trying to process this, saying, "Daddy, why are we going home?" I'm sitting in the passenger side just crying, trying to process what had just happened. I can imagine what my ex-wife was dealing with at the time, poor thing. You know, trying to figure out what happened, how am I going to endure this, as you mentioned, and where do we go from here? Well, for me, getting back finally to Modesto, my immediate family came, you know, to comfort me and try to find out what had happened. It was even difficult trying to tell them because I remember telling my sister, my older sister, you know, what had happened. And she had this really feeble look on her face. And I use this sometimes when I share with my patients, you know, as the people who don't understand the addiction piece of it and why we do what we do. She says, "Why don't you just stop? Why can't you just stop drinking?" Mm-hmm. You know, and that look on her face. And I thought, wow, yeah, what a concept. I wish I could, but it was, I didn't know how. I didn't know how to ask for help. And I sought my solace and my everything behind the bottle and drugs.
Yeah.
And so
how old were you, Peter, when this all was going on, when the accident happened?
at that time. And if I may, please, because every time I hear that term, and I know you mean well, Dr. Williams, it was an accident.
I
committed a crime. You know, that was a crime. And that's something I needed to understand because the multiple times that I did drink and drive prior to that, you know, it was basically, okay, I paid a fine, you know, did my little community service or whatnot, slap in the hand, and I moved on with my life. I never really understood that every time I drank alcohol, got behind the wheel, I was exhibiting criminal thinking and criminal behavior. And so, as I mentioned earlier, this is a crime. Drinking and driving, being intoxicated and driving is a crime. So I was 38 years old at the time. Again, as we mentioned, this past January 13th, I was an account manager for a chemical company doing real well career-wise, but never really sought the area of my life that really needed that healing and that, you know, I go back to the ACEs that you present, you know, those areas that I struggled with growing up and stuffing and not seeking the help that I needed. So I was 38 years old, you know, in the prime of my life, if you will, but I was just, I was lost. I had no direction. You know, I sought identity through a title, you know, the kind of clothes you wear, the amount of money you make, the kind of house you live in, and so forth and so on. So my journey began, first and foremost, as I mentioned, by coming to my knees and just giving my life to the Lord. And then immediately after that, that's when I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and that's where I met some wonderful, beautiful men there. And in the program, I was able to get a temporary sponsor. And I mean, I think looking back, I share this with my patients, you know, and whenever I do share my appropriate self-disclosure, that is wow, this happened November 7th. 2002, and I would have thought, well, that's your moment of clarity. You know, I mean, you're intoxicated in a complete alcoholic blackout. You kill somebody. That should be someone's moment of clarity, right?
Yeah.
Your bottom, if you will. Well, that following December 22nd, I wanted to drink again, you know, and that really scared me. And that really, that was my moment of clarity. You know,
unbelievable. Well, we're going to take our first break, and we're going to pick it back up on the other side of this short commercial break. But Peter, thank you already for correcting me and being so humble that it wasn't an accident. That just gave me goosebumps. Thank you for being so real. You don't want to miss the next 40 minutes of this. Just on the other side of the break. Join us right back in about a minute and 15 seconds for Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right. Thank you, Douglas. Appreciate your awesome radio voice. We want to thank you for just being with us tonight. Please call if you would like to ask Peter a question or a comment, if you just have some wisdom for him or just want to ask him something that we haven't jumped into yet. If you want to pick his brain a little bit, 888-627-6008. Would love to hear from you. Maybe not a similar story, but maybe you're having an issue with something that Peter's had an issue with and he overcame it. Maybe you have a question how you can help one of your own family members or a friend that you know. But I know Peter would love to hear from you anywhere in the world right now, 888-627-6008. 0008. Now, Peter, when you was listening to the show last week, and Tion was on, Dayton, an awesome doctor. What was one of the things that you heard that just kind of bounced off? It's like, wow, that is so right with what you go through, because it slapped you right in the face of reality in your own life. What was one of those things that you heard?
Well, I mean, she was telling my life story, basically. You know, I was thinking, wow. Oh, I'd love to have a cup of coffee with her, you know, and just chop it up. But, you know, the whole thing behind the living in the alcoholic home, one of the terms she may or may not mention was being a para-alcoholic, meaning you mm-hmm. don't drink, but you exhibit the traits and characteristics of an alcoholic. You know, another lady who trained me, Dr. Stephanie Brown, spoke of the family dynamics of the alcoholic family, where, you know, everybody plays a part, and that scapegoat, that was me.
Wow.
You know, I was the one. Yeah, I was the one. You know, look at me. I was exhibiting, you know, my parents' dysfunction through me, and I would try to do best in school and great athlete and this and that. But I was the one who ended up, out of all of my family members, basically going through what I had to go through. And, you know, and in retrospect, looking back, say, wow, that was me, you know. Mm-hmm. And not understanding that my dad was ill and he needed help, you know. And that's where Al-Anon helped me, above all places, in prison, to understand how to separate the disease from the person and how to detach with love and basically understand, you know, and ultimately finally being able to forgive him, because he passed away in 1990, and I look back, I was one of the pallbearers, and I was still angry at him, you know,
yeah.
And still caught up in my own addiction, and not knowing that, you know, years down the road I would be sitting in a California State Penitentiary attending Al-Anon meetings, you know, as well as AA, of course, and finally understanding, wow, okay, now I get it. And I was able to you know, just go ahead and forgive him, and to be able to say, well, you know, he did the best he could. He died sober, actually, which was fantastic. He died about 10 years sober. So, yeah, she was telling my story.
That's amazing. Now, you know, Peter, when you go through what you've gone through, and somebody else is going through a situation like that right now in their own life, and they're just by chance, and like I said, I don't believe in happenstance, so they're listening tonight for a reason. And if they wanted a piece of advice to be able to help them in the addiction that they're in right now, what's some of that advice that you would relay to them to be able to break through that cloudy mind that they're living in right now in their own life?
Well, I would say to them that they know, and speaking of myself, in your quietest moments, when you're by yourself, you know there's something wrong. You know there's something going on inside. There's that void. There's that fear. There's that shame. There's a stigma that society has on people who are struggling with addictions. I would tell them, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help, because you're not alone. I was always under the impression that we needed not to say anything. You know, what says here stays here in this house. When you leave, you put on a happy face. You put on, you know, your okay face. But deep down inside, I was hurting. You know, I was experiencing a lot of fear. I was experiencing a lot of toxic shame. And, you know, I finally realized years on the road, you know, it's not my fault that my dad is struggling with this, you know, but I took upon that shame, you know, the family shame, you know, the family secret. And just like they say in those rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're only as sick as our secrets.
Oh,
I would tell them this.
Oh, right? that is so good. Say that again. The people need to hear this. Say that again.
Well, what I heard in the rooms in the Alcoholics Anonymous is, we're only as sick as our secrets.
Wow.
You know, and going through that 12-step program, having someone to share, especially that fifth step, you know, admitting to someone, ourselves and God, the exact natures of our wrongs, that's a very liberating step, you know, in life, to be able to finally trust someone and say, hey, this is what's going on in my life. This is the things that I've gone through. And so I would tell that person, the individual, first of all, again, that you're not alone and there's nothing wrong with you. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Society, again, places that stigma on us, those with addictions or even mental health issues and whatnot. There's help. You know, there's Alateen, there's AA, there's Al-Anon, there's ACOA, there's NA, there's several help groups. Celebrate Recovery, faith-based, wonderful group.
Yes.
That I was finally introduced to while in prison. You know,
wow.
What a gift, you know,
yeah.
And that was part of my healing process while I was in prison. So again, if I can reiterate, you're not alone. There is help out there, and find someone who you can trust. And when I first started going to those AA meetings, I made sure I saw the differences between me and those people in those rooms, but it wasn't until I was able to finally humble myself and like, your guest mentioned, get away from that denial and say, you know what, let me look at the similarities now. And once I was able to see the similarities and listen to the similar stories and the fears and whatnot that people spoke of in their rooms, that's when I finally said, I'm home. These people get me, and they're not going to judge me. And that's what I loved about ACOA too, you know. All of us go through that experience of the dysfunction in our families. There's a mixed message saying, okay, this is my parent. I love this parent, but I'm also afraid of this parent, and I don't know how to react to him or her. And so I'm afraid, you know. So you go living like that for a while. And there's that quote that I use in my groups by Ernie Larson: what we live with, we learn. What we learn, we practice. And what we practice, we become.
You that know, is
and that was
such
so
a
in my yeah. life.
That's scripture. Yeah. I don't. Yeah, that's right out of the Bible. There ain't no doubt about
Amen.
That. That's good. Now, okay, let's turn the page then. Now, let's say somebody's okay. listening, and of course, if you call in tonight, we don't ask your name and phone number and all that stuff. You can call in and come up with a fictional name, change your voice a little bit or whatever. We don't need to get into all that. We just want to help. So, Peter, if somebody is living in a situation where they are in the home with a parent that is an alcoholic, what advice and wisdom do you have for them?
Well, if there's any siblings involved, you know, get together with your siblings. You know, we never did that. We always swept everything under the rug. We didn't talk about this. The conversation I'm having with you right now and people listening, we never had this conversation at home. So there was that shame behind that. If you do have siblings, grab a hold of the sibling, because more likely if you're going through it, they're going through it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, I would definitely encourage, if you're a teenager, seek out a school counselor, you know. And there may be some fear of possibly CPS getting involved or whatnot, but seek out a teacher, a counselor, a coach, someone who you can confide in, and or possibly another friend who's going through something similar in their house as well, too. I had a couple of friends with that they were going through the same thing, too, and it wasn't until we were in our late 30s, and a couple of my friends who visited me in prison said, wow, Peter, I was going through the same stuff, too. You know, and so there's that fear and that shame that keeps us from opening up and wanting to ask for help.
You know, I got a call about a year ago after the book came out from my best friend in high school. I hadn't heard from him in 25 years. And Steve said, Greg, I never knew anything was going on with you. You hit it so well. This completely shocked him. And he couldn't hardly believe it. He said, you know, I read the book and I just couldn't believe that this was my best friend in high school, and we did everything together. And that's amazing how we can hide behind what's happening in the house and even from our friends outside of those doors. And you're saying you even withheld it amongst the people inside the house, right, with your own siblings?
Yeah.
You never talked about it.
There were seven of us. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There were seven of us, but it was a lonely house. It was a very lonely house. There were seven of us. Can you imagine? Seven of us with the mom and dad. And we were just programmed to do our own thing. We just, in passing, if you will.
Yeah.
And I had a similar experience with my very best friend too, who finally, when I was sentenced and I was in CSP Solano back ago, he came to visit me. He goes, "Peter, I didn't realize how bad it was for you." I said, "Leonard, I didn't realize how bad it was for me either." You know, so yeah, those people that do know us, they really don't know what's really going on. We hide it so well.
Yeah. You said a couple words this 30, 35 minutes that we've been on the air that I want to jump on and just get your – I want to dig a little deeper if I could. You mentioned shame and guilt. Tell me, if you can, the different areas that you experience, those two – I call them the evil twins. I have a whole chapter on those evil twins that come into your life. Tell me how shame and guilt affected you in your life in the different areas that it did, and then how you overcame that, and if you ever have relapse back into that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great, great question. You know, I'm sure you can better expound on the difference between shame and guilt, but the way it was introduced to me, where it's guilt is behind the behavior and what I do, whereas shame is in the person who I think I believe I am and how I believe people perceive as the person who I am. And growing up, that shame kept me from bringing friends home because I was ashamed of the fact that my father was in whatever condition he might be in. And so I took upon that responsibility. And so the guilt for me behind that was I acted, I believe, out of that shame to mask it. And I ended up drinking myself to escape that shame. And it's so vicious. It's so scary. And some people may think, well, that doesn't make sense. But for me, it did. Because once I started drinking, that was my escape. And so behind the drinking, then my behavior, of course, followed suit. And I did many things behind my drinking. I'm not blaming the alcohol because I'm very accountable for my actions. And the guilt, it was like I'd feel guilty for a while and then I'd wait for a little bit and then something will come up, maybe a stressor or whatnot, and then I'd start feeling not so good about myself, my low self-esteem, and I needed something to make me feel better. So I figured I'd put something in my body and then here it goes again. I feel better now and then all of a sudden something happens and there's that guilt and there's that vicious cycle going over around and around again. And ultimately, the guilt behind getting behind the wheel and literally taking the breath away from another human being, I can't even begin to tell you the responsibility behind, having to live with that. And the best way that I can tell you that I've been able to deal with it is through forgiveness from God. Some people may think, oh, that's the easy route. For me, it was very difficult. It was very, very difficult until I was able to finally get around some healthy people to explain and teach me the word of God and to be committed to a life serving God. And so, have I forgotten about Charles? No, there hasn't been a day that's gone by that I don't get up every morning and I don't think of him.
Wow.
And not only that, but the impact that it had on others, the people who saw that day, there was people driving on the road, minding their own business that day, and they had to see this. So what impact that have on them? See the ripple effect behind the actions.
Yeah, and I always get kind of uptight a little bit when people say, "Hey, when you use God as a crutch or an out for all of this," it's like, "No, wait." The Word of God tells us that the truth sets you free. It sets you totally free, but you have to get to the real truth to receive it. And you can't keep doing the masquerade. And I know this so well. You have to realize I'm the one that's made the mistakes. I'm the one that's done it. And then at that point, God says, "Hey, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Let's just clean you up. And now let's use what you've gone through to help some other people that need some assistance in their journey in life." And
very well put. Yes, I totally agree. It's not. It doesn't give me the right to continue on sinning anymore.
Right. You know? Wow. Good stuff. I'll tell you what, I want you to check your cell phone to make sure you have a full battery. We're going to take our last commercial break right now. Then on the other side of this, I want to talk to you, Peter, about this drug that you counsel people that are involved in, what that does to people, what kind of epidemic that we have in our country about this, and what kind of assistance that you give them and wisdom that you give them to help them through that on a day-to-day basis. So join us right back for about the next minute and a half. We'll have a commercial break for more edition in the last segment of Breaking the Silence.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right. Thank you, Douglas. Well, I tell you, I've thoroughly enjoyed this last 40 minutes, and we got one more segment that we're going to do with Peter. And Peter, I hope your cell phone is still good and strong. Wanted to make sure you had – okay, good. Okay, we're in good shape then. We're on live radio. This happens sometimes, and apparently they're having some issues out in California and with blackouts and electric problems and things. So anyway, Peter, we're going to do a program, a video worldcast in the next few weeks. And I think I would love to invite you to be on that program. It's called Quest for Hope. And I want people to see your eyes and you tell them how you found hope. And I'll get with you in the next week or so when we book this worldcast, and want to get you on video to where it's live and we get to see your face and we'll talk face to face with the entire world. And I would, if you would be interested in doing that, I would love to have you as a guest on that program.
I'd be honored.
Okay, tell me, Peter, how, you know, on your day-to-day basis, this is what you now do. For I got a feeling it's not just your job. I got a feeling it is your passion. It is your calling. It is your purpose. Am I right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've seen what it did to my family growing up as a child and an intern. Eventually, doing the same thing to my own family, my own daughters. And so what we do where I work is we help people with opioid use disorders. And as I mentioned earlier, anybody from struggling with prescription medication, Oxycontin, Vicodin, Norcos, heroin, our doors are open to anybody. And what we provide is called a MAT program, M-A-T. It's a medication-assisted treatment where we provide a medication called Suboxone. It's a sublingual film. And so before even having anybody come in through our doors, we give them it's called a T&Q. It's called a treatment needs questionnaire, where we ask them several questions to see if they're appropriate for the program. We want to make sure that we don't just take clients in or patients just to have patients, because we're not in the numbers. We want to make sure that we give them the proper level of care. And so we're a spoke out here in San Luis County. Our hub is like our parent, and we work off of them. And so people come into our offices, and I'll do the treatment needs questionnaire, and then I hand them over to our registered nurse, and she'll do what's called a medical MAT intake, where they have a bunch of questions. They break down the program. She does. She gets them. Make sure she gets them medically cleared to be part of the program. And then once that's been approved, then they'll be introduced to the provider, which is one of our primary care physicians, and they'll start what's called induction, and they'll figure out exactly what proper dosage the individual needs. The Suboxone helps with the withdrawals and the cravings, and so we give them a team. We give them the provider, the registered nurse, our medical assistant, myself as a substance abuse counselor, and we also offer our clinicians for any mental health needs that they may need, because as you may very well know, a lot of us who were addicted to a substance have co-occurring issues, whether it be anxiety, depression, bipolar, PTSD. And so we want to make sure that we give them the holistic treatment, you know, so we give them that option. And I just tell them, hey, look at us as your team. You know, we're here for you.
Yeah. Is it residential or is it all outpatient?
It's outpatient. It's all, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. It's outpatient. They come in initially on a weekly basis, and then as they progress, as they're doing well, they may drop down to biweekly, and then possibly monthly, and eventually have them weaned off in that way. And so, you know, we make sure that we connect them to resources out in the community as well, whether it be housing, transportation, whatnot. We actually have teamed up with Uber to help them get rides to their appointments, to the clinic, and also to the pharmacy to pick up their medication.
Well, that's great. Now, what kind of, you know, I'm from a little small town in middle of the country. I moved to Houston about 10 years ago. What kind of problem is this word that's being thrown around, opioid? What kind of issue is our country having with this drug?
Well, it's a very, very, how can I put it? This is a very serious situation, because I don't know if you've been reading the news. There's a substance called fentanyl. Are you familiar with fentanyl? That's
yes.
Like 100 times more potent, than morphine. Well, what's happening is they're starting to cut the pills and the heroin with fentanyl, and people are just not waking up. And so the problem is, you know, it could start with someone having chronic pain, being prescribed, and they're taken as prescribed. And as you know better than I, doctor, you know, the pleasure pathway, the dopamine, you know, it wants that. And the next thing you know, it's asking for more. And now people are not just taken as prescribed. Now they're running out, and now they're taking it eventually now to just to maintain. And then some people graduate from that to even going to using heroin. And we're talking people who, you know, husbands, wives, parents, professional people, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It has no bias whatsoever. And so there's this, I have one patient who came into our clinic because she almost OD'd on some pressed pills. And those pressed pills, these people are getting these pressed machines and they're pressing these pills, making them look like Oxycontins and Narcos and Vicodins, but they're actually filling them with fentanyl, and very, very dangerous. And you're rolling the dice out there, you know, when you're buying these pills off the streets, you know, and it is an epidemic.
So it has a domino effect, is it not, on the society? Because once you can't get it anymore, or, you know, you want and need more, you start running out of money. So there's crime that is involved, and it just turns into a vicious cycle, does it not?
Yeah, there's a term that we used to use when I was working inside the prison with the gentleman in our SAP program. There's an addict criminal, you know, where you cross over from using and misusing, and you become addicted. And now that you said it beautifully, now, okay, I'm running out. Now I got to get something. So how am I going to get it? You know, I need to go get something, and I'm going to do whatever I can, because these withdrawals are just killing me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so and these people are just suffering through these withdrawals, so they're going to do whatever they can to get their fix. If I may, I have one patient, just a wonderful lady, who just shared, you know, the other day, with, you know, she goes, I can't believe, and she broke down. She goes, you know, since I came to your program, it's amazing how much money I'm saving. You know, I was able to take my daughter and my grandson to the mall. I was able to buy him stuff that he really didn't need it. And her face just lit up, and she just broke down crying. I said, well, what's wrong with that? She goes, well, all these years I was spending, I mean, so much money a month. And here I am, you know, realizing the money that I could be spending on my family or on myself, I was just dumping and throwing it away. And you know, she was really hard on herself, you know, and it was my job to validate her, say, no, you know what, don't hold that against you yourself, you know. But now, you know, you're on this journey now, you know, be grateful. And she goes, yeah, I know, I have to. You know, here's a prime example of a wonderful mom and grandma and who just got caught up in that cycle and didn't realize, you know, the extent of the addiction, where it took her.
Wow. Now, I have not asked permission to talk about this with you, but I'm just going to throw it out there. And if you don't want to go there, don't. Feel free to say stop. You mentioned your daughters. How are they doing? How did this affect them? Is there anything that they experienced because of the trauma that they went through that you were able to talk about or work through with them after the fact? Anything going on there with them, if that's all right to talk about?
No, that's perfectly all right. And I'm so glad you asked. And yeah, by all means. So with my daughters, you know, when I had to go away for those 18 years to life prison sentence, they were going to be 7 and 5 at the time. In fact, my younger one was going to get ready to start kindergarten, you know, and, you know, here I am, daddy, should be their first day of kindergarten with her. You know, I get a picture of her first day in kindergarten and I'm in a cell with some guy I just met. And I'm just, I wept like a baby. But initially, I'm so grateful that their mother is just a wonderful, wonderful lady. And she initially got them counseling, you know, which was a great idea. And I basically, you know, watched them, you know, between 7 and 5 to, you know, 17 and 15 grow up behind prison walls, you know. And whenever they would visit me, I would be open and honest with them. But I know it had to affect them to a certain degree. To what degree, I can't really tell you. But I would always share with them, and if there's anything you want to talk about, that, you know, whether this experience, you know, me leaving, please, you know, I'm here for you. I'm very transparent with them. I did have one incident with my younger daughter that, you know, I actually caught her with some marijuana, you know, and you know, she brought it home at the house. And when I came home, you know, when I came home, she was living with me. And so we talked about that, you know, and I set my counselor hat aside, and then I put my father's hat and my recovering addict's hat on. I said, hey, you know, and I broke it down to, you know, where you're my daughter and you're highly susceptible. Once you start, you could definitely get cross over into being, you know, addicted. And so, but they're doing great. They're both going to college. You know, their mom and I, their mother had remarried to a wonderful guy, and we all get along. And I'm just so grateful that their mom was very healthy. And this is a good example of having one healthy parent. And had we both been addicted, who knows how that could have turned out for them, you know?
Yeah, it could have been another situation. Thank goodness for that. But so they're what are they going to college for?
They're business majors.
Okay.
They're not sure what they're going to do with the degree. I said, but no, you know, you use that degree, I'm sure it'll work out for something. Just find your passion, find what you want to do, you know. And so yeah, they're doing great. I'm so proud of them.
That is awesome. We got about another minute or two. Peter, anything that you want to share before we sign off tonight? Anything that you just like to, from your heart, to tell people if they want to get in touch with you, or if they would like to have you maybe come and talk, or just reach out to you? How would they do that? And then anything that you have on your heart that you just want to share?
Well, they can reach me. Right now what I do is I do speaking engagements at DUI classes. I even do the Every 15 Minutes program here, and we have in California, Stanislaus County. They can reach me at my email. I'll underscore my name, peter.maldonado@live.com. And that's peter.maldonado, M-A-L-D-O-N-A-D-O, @live.com. I'd be more than glad to speak with anybody or visit with anybody. And the one thing that I really want to share with everyone is, you know, and you said something earlier as well about, you know, failure. You know, there are no failures in life. You know, a wonderful lady by the name of Dr. Jenny Boyer, who I used to work for, she said, there is no failure, just feedback. You know, if you take that attitude into everything you do, you know. So if it didn't work out this way, it's not necessarily you failed. It's like, okay, what did I learn from this so I can either do it to accomplish it in a better way or to make it work? and please don't allow either a mental health issue, whether it be anxiety, depression, bipolar, some PTSD, or even if you're struggling with any type of substance, don't let society hang that stigma over you. It's okay to ask for help. It takes more courage to ask for help and to admit than it does to try to hide it and get caught up in the closet of secrets that keeps you just going downward, you know. Mm-hmm. So there is help.
Fantastic. You know, I want to personally, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for coming up to just say howdy after that presentation in California, because my life is a whole lot better since I've got to meet you. And I just appreciate you giving your time tonight and the last couple times just to share with us. And I got a feeling that we're going to become even closer friends and keep doing some stuff together on the radio and via the video cast. And I have a feeling that – I don't even know if you thought about it. I just got a gut that there may be a book in you. Have you thought about that?
You know, a couple of people have mentioned that, and I just kind of just set it to the side. But who knows what God has planned, you know, and I keep it in God's hands. And I definitely want to express the same sentiments towards you, Dr. Williams. The feeling's very mutual. When I heard you speak that day about the ACEs, I said, I got to go out and talk to this guy. I need to talk to this guy right now. Thank you so much.
Well, we appreciate it. Matter of fact, I'm going to be at the next Counselor Magazine conference April 1st, April 2nd in California. So I'll be one of the keynotes there. So if I don't know if you're going to go to that one, but I'd love to have a cup of coffee with you if you're there.
All right. It's on me.
I'll take you up on it. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for being with us. And I really appreciate it. And folks, if you really want to just know how to get through any kind of situation, reach out to Peter and say howdy to him or just ask him a question. I'm sure he will respond and be as gracious as he has been with us the last couple times here on the radio program. But reach out to him and say hi and how much you appreciate it. And if you want to, you can just send those to me, and I will be glad to forward those right on. And you can get all of that information as the show closes out. Doug will tell you how to reach out to me. So no matter what you are involved in tonight, no matter what's going on in your life, we always close the program the same way. Want to let you know, without a shadow of a doubt, there's hope for you. There's always hope. There's a reason that you're still around. There's a reason that there's going to be tomorrow if the sun's up and you open up your eyes. There's a reason for that day, for your existence. Go out and find it. But I guarantee you, while you're out looking for it, hope is there. It's right there. Reach for it. As Peter and myself have both said many a time on this program, God's the answer. God is a major part of this. Without knowing the love of the Creator, how can we know what real love is all about? The rest of it's fake. You got to know the author of love. And once you know that, God will put his arms around you, show you, and give you grace and mercy to help you get over whatever you've gone through. Reach for the hope. It's there. Join us next week right here. We're going to have an awesome guest. Her name is Donna Jackson Nakazawa, and an awesome book that you will not want to miss next week right here. Join us. Have an awesome week. God bless you, and we can't wait to be with you next week on another edition of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. God bless. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness at gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.